here we are with another Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton podcast. By the way, thank you to those of you who have subscribed. We appreciate that. That helps us market and promote the podcast so more people will tune in. Today, we welcome you to a program we know is going to challenge and stimulate your faith and bless you. Bart Barber has served as pastor at First Baptist Farmersville, Texas, for the past 24 years, and currently serves as the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. And today, he is our special guest on Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. Join Bart and Mark for a one-on-one conversation about SBC statistics, dying churches, and get your pen and paper ready for this, birthing cattle. So, without further ado, Mark Clifton, it's your show.
I'm Mark Clifton, and we are actually, Dan and I are in the home studio today, the Revitalize and Replant home studio from Knobtown, Missouri. That's where the home studio is, and we're grateful to have with us as a very special guest, the one, the only, you know him, Bart Barber, the president, ladies and gentlemen, of the Southern Baptist Convention. Our studio audience is just thrilled. Bart, thank you for the time you've given us right before the SBC to come and spend some time with us here at Revitalize and Replant. Seriously, we're deeply grateful for your time. We're a podcast about revitalization and replanting. So just off the top of your mind and your heart, talk to me about what you think is important about rescuing dying churches, why that matters. What do you think about that?
Well, Jesus founded the church and gave his life for the church. And so that makes them very important. And I'll say that, you know, I grew up in a small church that went through some waves of growth and also some times of near collapse, just with changes in the community around them, such as it was, very rural church. And that church, after it would go through times when they didn't think it would make it, when it would be revitalized, before there were people who knew about programs to try to help this, God would just breathe on that church and be revitalized. They went a lot of people to Jesus.
Yeah.
And, one of those was me. I came to faith during one of those seasons of revitalization at that small rural church. And God called me to preach during that season as well. And so I think that a church that preaches the gospel is faithful to the Lord is always brimming with potential. God changes the world through institutions such as that. And we ought not to give hope away whenever there's something that has that much potential in front of
us. I agree. We say all the time, Jesus has a plan for every church. He's not looking at any church going, hey, I don't know what to do about that one. It's a mess. He knows what to do. And as long as there are people to be reached, a community to be reached, man, there's a need for the church there. And, you know, Southern Baptist, we see about 800 SBC churches that cease to exist every year for one reason or another. Many of them simply close their doors. And Bart, most of those are not in rural, unpopulated areas. I grew up in a rural area. My father pastored in a rural area. I live in a rural area now. Our church is in a community of 400. You can have a church in a rural area that has 10 or 12 people, and it can go on for decades because the community sees nothing particularly unusual about that. It can self-sustain. But you put a church of 12 people in a metropolitan area, it's not going to exist much longer. So we're actually closing churches where we need them the most. And for a number of years, we just ignored dying churches and just kind of planted around them. But now I think definitely as Southern Baptists, we're looking to see dying churches a place to platform to display the glory and the grace of God.
You know, in some cases, I think it really harnesses. I know you haven't asked me a question yet, but
I don't have any questions. We're just talking here. You actually think I planned for this? You think we write things out? I mean, you know, no, not really. Go ahead.
I want to tell you a story about FBC Farmersville's engagement in a replant, I think it shows that you can harness people's past emotional connections to a church that you're trying to replant in ways that may be unique to a replanting sort of circumstance. We were on vacation. And of course, I think everybody who's listening to your podcast, who's a pastor, will be familiar with the fact that 6 hours after we left home for vacation, somebody died.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was actually a pastor who had been like a mentor to me, someone very close to me. And I knew we had 2 weeks of vacation planned, and I knew that I was going to need to go back for this funeral. And we were going way up into the Northwest. And so we changed our travel plans, drove all through the first night instead of staying somewhere, and wound up very exhausted after 36 hours of driving and stuff in Billings, Montana, and spent the night there. And we had one more day, and then I was going to have to fly back somehow to do this funeral in the DFW area. And so we took off driving toward Yellowstone. We were going to Yellowstone National Park. And I told them, I said, I've almost got my arrangements made. It's hard to find flights out here, and I need a car and whatever else. And when we leave Bozeman, headed down into Yellowstone, I think we're going to lose all cellular communication capabilities. And I've got to finish all that. So we need to stop in Bozeman and wait for a while. So my father-in-law said, I'm thankful that we're going to get stopped in Bozeman, because way back in the 70s, he had a ministry. He lived in Nashville. My wife grew up in Nashville. And he had a ministry of buying old vehicles, old buses. And he and a friend who worked on cars, grew up on a farm, knew how to turn a wrench, you know, they would refurb these buses and then give them to churches for bus ministry in the 70s. And he said, I drove all the way up here from Nashville and dropped off a bus at a church in the 1970s. And I'd like to check in on that church and see how they're doing. So we go looking for it. He remembered exactly where it was.
Yeah.
And so we drove up to find it, and there was the building.
Yeah.
And the sign, but the sign had no letters on it. And there's one car that was parked under, you know, next to the door, under the overhang, next to the door. And so we pulled in and walked in. Here's what we discovered. The church had nearly gone out of existence. They had decided to replant it. The replanting had started without a replanting pastor. They just had a couple from Oklahoma who with a banker and his wife who felt God calling them into missions. They found this need in Bozeman. They moved out there just to be members of this church, to replant it. They had just found a pastor. The pastor was a guy named Sean Stevenson. He and his wife, Lydia, had been IMB missionaries to Poland. And I guess Montana, they were the only people who could come to Montana to warm up. We found them. They had been living in the church building. We showed up on the day they were moving out. A day later, we would not have found them. And his wife, Lydia, was related to a guy my dad had played baseball with in high school. And we discovered what was going on, and we went on vacation. We were not going to find a church replanting opportunity for FBC Farmersville to invest in. But because of the past emotional connection, my wife had ridden with her dad to that church in Montana.
That is cool.
And because of the emotional connection to that former church with a universe of opportunities to go in and plant somewhere, we said, we want to be a part of this. We want to help you. And so I think sometimes you've got baggage maybe from an old church, but sometimes you also have positive emotional connection.
Yes.
To a church that's struggling that will make people, want, even outside partners, want to lean in and help revitalize and replant a church that needs that.
Absolutely. In fact, Bart, sometimes we used to refer to it as legacy church planting, planting something new on the legacy that God had there for decades previous. And that's a great story. So good to hear that. I love the way those divine appointments take place. And again, it's just an example that Jesus has a plan for every church. He knew you would be there. He put all those things together. I love the story about the bus ministry and the bus. And I'm old enough, man. I spent most of my teenage years at church on a bus. It's like, that's about all I did. We had bus ministry at our church and every Saturday. Yep. Same thing. Okay, let me ask you a couple of quick questions here. I appreciate that, man. I really do. Obviously, the people are talking about the numbers. You know, the decrease in church membership and number of churches sliding, but yet increase in baptisms, increase in attendance. talk to our audience a little more about that. Unpack that. How do you see that? What do you think that foretells for us?
I don't see how you can get bad news out of an increase in baptisms. I think in the end, that probably corrects a lot of things. I'll tell you, at FBC Farmersville a couple of years ago, we were in a position where we're putting money in the bank every year, but we weren't reaching people nearly as effectively as we wanted to. And we've got a year right now where we're running at a slight operating loss for the year because we made some changes to our budget to add some things to try to reach people. And we're on track for the highest number of baptisms we've ever had. And when I go in and do reporting at congregational business meetings for that, I say, this is a good deal. It's a good trade for us to be able to do this, because if we share the gospel, win people to Christ, and baptize people, God will take care of our finances in the long term. And in the same way, I think if we continue to plant new churches and continue to reach people with the gospel and continue to revitalize our churches, a decrease in membership at a church doesn't hurt a church. A decrease in attendance can hurt a church, but a decrease in membership numbers does not. And an increase in baptisms, you show me a church that is baptizing more people, and I'm telling you, I'm optimistic about what the future is going to be for that church. So I think the analogy here is just to say, I don't look at our operating at a slight loss this year, a planned loss for FBC Farmersville, to say we wanted to spend a little more money and reach more people, and we've succeeded at both. And so I don't look at that and say it doesn't matter that FBC Farmersville is operating at a loss. I just look and say it matters so much more that we're adding a bunch of new families and that we're baptizing a bunch of new believers, adults and children, and good things are happening all around. Those things matter so much more. And in the same way, I would say that it matters how many churches are in the SBC. It matters when we lose churches. It ought to motivate us to be really really excited about replanting and revitalizing churches. But one of the measures of revitalization in our churches is the fact that we're baptizing more people,
yeah,
and that we see increased attendance. And so on the whole, all those numbers matter, but we should emphasize the ones that matter the most.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think given the strong cultural headwinds that we are facing, to see an increase in baptisms is truly a movement of God. I mean, completely. And also, Bart, I've been in this work for over 40 years. I used to do all church planting for the Home Mission Board and North American Mission Board. And man, nobody was interested in dying churches. Nobody wanted to talk about dying churches. Nobody wanted to go to a dying church. And now when I'm on seminary campuses and out at state conventions, I get all kinds of some of the best and brightest that Southern Baptists have who really are interested in going to a dying church and seeing it come back. And I mean, God is up to something, or he wouldn't be calling so many great young men to go to dying churches. And we're seeing time after time these churches that look totally hopeless in the midst of incredibly strong cultural headwinds coming back. And I really think that's a story that most Southern Baptists aren't fully aware of. We're talking hundreds of these in the last few years that absolutely would be gone. We got Assembly of God, American Baptist, Nazarene, Free Will Baptist. They've all reached out to us recently and said, how are you guys doing this? What? That's a totally different thing to see churches come back to life. And so what are your thoughts really about the importance of that as far as the Southern Baptist Convention? You know, 90% of our churches are less than 200, and a number of them, I think over 50%, are somewhere around less than 65 or 70 in attendance. And so if they get too much smaller, then they get into what Rainer calls a death spiral. So it's really important we pay attention to these, because they're in neighborhoods, they're in communities. We've got more Southern Baptist churches than we have Starbucks or McDonald's. They're everywhere. And yet, I don't think we fully understand the impact that those churches could have if they're truly revitalized in making disciples. So
let me say, first of all, those are some of the most exciting stories that I read in Baptist press or in our state paper when they talk about smaller churches that have a new wind in their sails, they're winning people to Christ. Fact is, all of our churches have lost people all around us, no matter how long your church has been there, because there's a new generation that comes to be born in your community every few years, right? That still have a chance to hear the gospel. And so those churches are needed. I'll tell you, as somebody who's studied Southern Baptist history, church history, there was a there was a powerful desire in the mid-1800s, late-1800s, to look at the map and make sure that there was a Southern Baptist church proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ close enough to where everybody lived that they could go and encounter the gospel there and could be a follower of Jesus Christ. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, I think it's not only the prayers of people these days that are affecting this. I think some of the God's listening to some of the prayers that people prayed 200 years ago. Yep. Because when you have a small rural church, it's in a community that's not as big as it used to be. Your town of 400, yep, let's say. And that town had a day when it ran 800, but now it's running 400. Okay. I don't know about your town, but a town like that. And you look and you say, well, this church is about to die, but you know, this town's not that big anymore anyway. Why do they need one? Or the church that my mother-in-law goes to, which is Cedar Bluff Baptist Church, out in a rural area of the Missouri Ozarks. The town you live in is up by Kansas City. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Linwood, between Kansas City and Lawrence out in Kansas.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So I think it's important to note that you live in Missouri, but yes, my mother-in-law lives in Missouri.
That's true.
So down in that part of the world, you can look and say, well, this church runs 15, sometimes 20, you know, and you can say, well, why do we really need a church like that? Well, some of the reason is because people live there.
That's right.
People live there.
Yep.
And how many people does it have to be before Jesus cares about them?
Yep.
You know, a small group of people are still people for whom Jesus died.
Yep.
And those people would have to drive 40 minutes to get to a church that was larger.
I tell you, when we get to heaven, we are going to be so amazed that God did so much with such little places that we're just not going to be able to understand till we get to heaven the full impact of churches like the one you're talking about.
Absolutely.
But they have a huge, huge kingdom impact. They're not just spinning their wheels and wasting time. If they're proclaiming the gospel and they're loving people, God's using that for his glory. And man, we got to embrace every one of those we have.
Well, and really, the larger churches need them too, because when you look at how many seminary professors,
yep,
grew up in a context like that, or missionaries grew up in a context like that, or state executive director treasurers, or trustees, or authors, or people who've done all sorts of things, that larger churches are using those resources from the people that God raised up from places like that. You can see that all our churches need each other. We're a gift to one another, and we need to tend to the health of the smaller churches in our convention too.
Yeah. And really, just to go back to Linwood, when my wife and I went there in May of 2020, there were three remaining members, just three. And the church was up for sale. But now, just 3 years later, about 75 people worship every Sunday morning. We baptized 20. It's the best thing going in that little town right now. And that can happen all across North America. I mean, and God's doing some amazing things in some really small places. And I'm thrilled about it. You know,
there's a great opportunity coming that we need these churches to be strong for.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, churches with the gospel of Jesus Christ care for people so much better than the secular world does.
Man, I'll tell you, I was with Frank Lewis. I think Frank Lewis said this. I believe it was. Or somebody said it, whatever. Anyway, he did Humpty Dumpty, you know, goes Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses, all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. And I'd never thought about this, but it's like, you know, our culture has just broken apart and yeah, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put that back together again. No matter how hard we try secularly, we can't fix what's broken in our world. The only thing that can fix it is Christ and what we have. And ever since he said that, I've been so aware that every community needs the gospel. Every community needs a church.
Exactly right.
Hey, we talk about several things, and we're about to wrap it up here, but we talk about several things that revitalization pastors need. And one of them is pastoral grit, an ability to stay in a place, love the people through all kinds of difficulties, lean into the awkward, lean into the difficult, and not leave and still stay on a track. You've done that at Farmersville. Talk a little bit about the importance of pastoral grit in ministry and how that looks and what God can do with someone who develops that. And basically, how do you develop that?
Well, I think that the indispensable element of it is letting Jesus make you fall in love with your church. There are times when I would have been gone, but for that, sometimes maybe would have been gone because of difficulties here. There was a time about 3 years in where there was, it's not an uncommon story, right? That you reach a point post-honeymoon where you're trying to work things out. And there was a lot of tension there for just a little bit. During that time, I was in the middle of PhD studies and a lot of stresses on my mind and in my life and my calendar and everything else. And on top of that, the church had a long tenured pastor before me who'd done an amazing job, and they were dissatisfied in some ways. And it would have been easy to leave at that time just because of negative things that were happening here. And also times later on when I just had things were fine here, but other opportunities came along. I talked to a church and we were very seriously having a conversation at that point, and they were down to two candidates, and the search committee chair had pretty much said, "You're the one candidate, we think. We just want to do this last interview." And so I went there and I sat down and interviewed with them. And in the middle of our conversation, by the way, I do not advise this. This is not the right way to conduct an interview. But in the middle of our conversation, I just looked up at them as I'd been talking about some of the things that we'd been through, some of the ways the church had carried my family through crisis and whatever else. I looked at them and I said, "You know what? The fact of the matter is, there's just no way on earth you're a better church than the church I'm at right now." and so really, falling in love with your church, I think, is not only the key to having grit and staying, but I think it's also just like a marriage. How do you stay in a marriage? Every marriage has conflict. You're in love with each other and you work to push through it. But I think it's also the key to change. I was asked by a prominent pastor not long ago to offer some thoughts about how to make change in a church if you come in. And I said, "You know what? The main key is for everybody to know how much you love the church. And if the changes you're introducing feel to people like you're saying, 'I love the history of this church, and this is our doing what people did in the past to make this church great. It's just our applying it to a new day.'" It's like you can get away with adding "My chains are gone" to Amazing Grace if people feel like you didn't do that because you thought Amazing Grace, God bless it, it's past its time, nobody likes it anymore, I've got to rescue it. But if you get the feeling that Chris Tomlin is just in love with Amazing Grace so much that in the middle of singing at the 50th time in his studio, he just broke out spontaneously into a chorus that he added on to it. If it's a product of love, then people who love Amazing Grace can love what he added to it. And so I think it helps solve problems, and it helps you stick and stay if you let God lead you to love that church and love the people in it.
Man, that's awesome. We say all the time, you preach, pray, love, and stay. And again, you're so spot on. Jared Wilson always says you have to love the church you have, not the church you wish you had.
Yep.
And man, if you love the church, and the way you love the church even more is to love Jesus more, because it's his church. So Amen. The more you love him, the more you'll love. Hey, by the way, thank you for that. And the guys who are listening to this, they need to hear that. Revitalizing guys, we always want to go somewhere else. It's so easy these days to send your resume out via email to all kinds of places, feel like you're not being well loved and cared for here. But man, just stick with it. That sense of pastoral grit is so incredibly important and so rewarding in the long term. By the way, happy anniversary.
I want to add one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
You'll regret adding me onto the podcast because I never stop talking. But in the first few years of my ministry, I would leave and go to other places because it was a chance to start over. I was young. I'd made some mistakes. I'm facing the consequences of mistakes that I'd made. I thought, you know what? I've learned some lessons. Let's bail out here and go somewhere I can start over with things I've learned. Now, at 24 years in at FBC Farmersville, I don't want to go somewhere else because I would have to start over. And You know, if you'll stick with it, if you'll hang on,
I know,
you'll get to the point where you say, I've moved through these obstacles and difficulties now. And do I really want to do that again? Do I want to start over somewhere else? And so it helps.
That is a solid word, Bart. I appreciate so many things about you and your heart, mainly that you're a pastor. My dad was a pastor, my great grandfather. Obviously, you love being a pastor. You love that ministry. And that really comes out. And I deeply appreciate it. By the way, happy 31st anniversary, right? Is that right?
Thank you. Yeah. Almost all of my loves are coming into this. I love my wife. I love my church. I love the Southern Baptist Convention. The only thing we haven't talked about is how much I love the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well, we're recording this, you know, whenever we're recording it, but just a few days ago, Kansas City defeated St. Louis 7-0. I just thought I would kind of bring that up.
Did not get the no hitter though.
I know my son and my grandsons are huge Cardinal fans. That's all they talk about. So I live with that constantly. I do. Hey, we're going to do. Hey, thanks again. I really appreciate it. Man, you mean so much to me personally, more than you know, and to many pastors of normative sized churches. Man, you are just a tremendous inspiration to us and grateful for your leadership. So we're going to end with final four. Here are final four questions. All right. Do you wear waders or not when you baptize?
Yes.
You do wear waders. All yes. right. Number two, I think I know the answer to this, but we ask it anyway. Do you suit up when you preach?
Yes, I do.
Talk about that real quick.
A couple of things. When people ask me about it, I always say, I'm afraid my mom will find out if I preach and I'm not in a suit and tie. And there's a little bit of truth to that. In fact, she's got Alzheimer's and very advanced at this point. So it doesn't make a difference anymore. But for a long time, she was way more likely to recognize me and know who I was if I showed up in a suit and tie. So I would suit up just to go see mom in the nursing home.
That is sweet.
But seriously, I started preaching when I was 15. And in rural churches in Northeast Arkansas, I didn't need to try to look younger.
I got you.
It's just something that's been kind of a part of who I am and have been for a long time. And
all right.
I'm comfortable in it.
All right. Third one. Do you preach from a pulpit or from like a high cocktail table?
We have a pulpit that has been in our worship facility for decades and decades and decades. Right.
And then last one, Southern Gospel or Bluegrass? Which would it be?
Bluegrass.
Oh, you're the man after my own heart. Cattle, by the way, one of the guys at my church, it has a cattle operation, and he raises Gilfies, these wonderful Gilfie. He's got a lot of Gilfies. What do you raise? What do you have?
Santa Gertrudis, which is a better breed for down here. They were developed on the King Ranch in Texas. They're very tolerant of the heat and resistant to disease. And as a pastor who's got cattle, I'll tell you what, one thing that matters is that they almost never need help calving, because if a cow's trying to calve and having trouble on a Sunday morning when I need to go to preach, she's just not going to make it because I can't be out there. So,
all right. And can you finish this? How much of it can you finish? This is the last thing we always ask. As a royal ambassador, I will do my best.
I was never an RA. Our church was just too small. Our community, we had Cub Scouts for about 6 weeks until the den mothers gave up on us. Right. And so we really didn't have any institutions like that in my growing up.
Oh, well, you know, I miss Royal Ambassadors. It's where I learned about missions. It's where I learned about missionaries. And I miss it a great deal. So anyway, hey, thank you for being with us today on this episode of Revitalize and Replant. And man, we're glad to have you. Thank you for what you do. And man, subscribe. And hey, Dan, take us out, as they say.
Wow, this has been one of those programs where you learn so much. We might have to change the name to Revitalize, Replant, and Refarm. thank you so much, Bart. This has been so informative. And as I was listening, I was thinking, wow, what an encouragement for pastors who are dealing with the sense that they're alone in this. You've been through that, and you certainly spoke to that. So thank you so much. For those of you who've been listening, thank you for listening. Please subscribe and let your friends know about it. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to get in touch with us, and we'll try to follow up on that. We are on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So those are the schedules for listening to the podcast. And so you can set your calendar and your clock for that. Thank you so much for listening to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. See ya.
That wraps up another episode of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. And special thanks to Bart Barber, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, for joining us today. If you'd like to learn more about revitalization and replanting, please join us August 28th and 29th at the National Replant Summit in Alpharetta, Georgia. The program includes H.B. Charles, pastor at Shiloh Metropolitan Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida; Tim Booker, dean and professor of evangelism and church growth, Billy Graham School of Missions, Evangelism and Ministry at Southern Seminary; Jeff Chang, curator, Spurgeon Library, and assistant professor of historical theology at Midwestern Seminary, as well as Mark Halleck, Brian Croft, and Mark Clifton. 2 days packed with information and encouragement on your renewal journey. Register at churchreplanters.com. And be sure to always join us here each Tuesday and Thursday for brand new episodes of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, helping you discover Jesus' plan for your church. So long.